The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the encouragement that I offered in the guided practice to notice the moment of awareness returning. I'm curious how many of you, maybe just with a little show of hands, could do that, could be curious about that and get a sense of what that's like, that moment of mindfulness returning. Was that possible? So some of you. Okay, nice, good. It's a great place to begin to get familiar with the experience of mindfulness itself, of awareness. I use those two terms interchangeably, awareness and mindfulness, because in the moment before, mindfulness was not there, or in the moments before, and so there's a little bit of a contrast as mindfulness returns. There's a little bit of a contrast, and so we can more easily begin to notice the experience of mindfulness itself. And this kind of recognition begins to help our minds to attune to mindfulness. It's said that one of the proximate causes for mindfulness is mindfulness. And, this moment of mindfulness returning is one of those moments of mindfulness that is the proximate cause for further moments of mindfulness. And the recognition of it, as with any wholesome quality, the recognition or the awareness or the connection or the kind of attunement to that experience of being mindful strengthens that quality, that wholesome quality. And so the recognition of it helps support our being able to recognize it more often and more easily, and actually also begins to support our ability to recognize mindfulness more in the flow of being aware, not just in the moment when mindfulness returns. But this moment of mindfulness returning is also a really powerful practice in daily life. In fact, for a good stretch of time, that's been one of my main practices in daily life, is noticing that moment when mindfulness returns. And if you can begin to get familiar with it in the sitting practice, you might then also begin to get familiar with it in daily life. And it's amazing, actually, how often it happens that we become aware in daily life of something. We're walking down the street and a puppy dog bounds across our path and we become aware. Maybe we were lost in thought and we become aware again for a moment, but rarely do we actually recognize, oh, I became aware. We become more interested in the puppy dog and we probably lose our mindfulness again as our mind follows the puppy dog down the trail. So, but that kind of recognition or familiarity with mindfulness returning can help us to notice that we've become aware when we see the puppy dog or anything. We can begin to notice this arising of mindfulness when we're crossing a street, when we're picking up a glass, when we're taking a bite of food, when we're sitting down on the sofa, when we're walking around outside and smell a flower. We can begin to notice this moment of mindfulness returning. And in that moment of mindfulness returning, the couple useful things there. One might just be to simply kind of take in, that you are aware. That's a big piece of it. Oh, awareness is back. This is what mindfulness feels like. And then if it's easy, if it feels like it's natural to just kind of know what it is that mindfulness knows in that moment, the smell of the flower or the sight of the puppy dog. And it's like you don't have to return to anything else. There's no agenda here to, necessarily be mindful of something in particular, but to be able to be aware that we are aware of something. And so what is most obvious in that mindfulness arising? What is being received? I use that terminology in the guided meditation also. What is this mindfulness receiving? Another thing, though, that can happen is that it won't be so clear what the object of mindfulness is, or what the experience, that word object is sometimes unfamiliar to people. But I mean by object is just whatever the experience is that mindfulness is connecting with in that moment. And sometimes it's not that obvious. I mean, it's kind of like, well, I become aware, and it's like, yeah, I know they're seeing and hearing, and you know, there's the thought going on in my mind, but it doesn't really feel like there's, you know, I don't know sometimes exactly what the attention is really taking in. It feels more vague or diffuse or just not so clear. Sometimes, though, it can be useful in that place, you know, once you have kind of attuned to, okay, this is mindfulness returning, is kind of to check in, well, how is the mind in relationship to experience? So, and very simply in daily life, really simply, like, is there agitation or ease in the mind right now in relationship to whatever is happening? And I've seen this kind of be an interesting exploration. It's sometimes easier to kind of know when mindfulness returns, okay, aware again, and sometimes it's easier to know whether there's agitation or ease associated with that awareness than it is to really know what the awareness is aware of. Sometimes that's the case. In fact, last week when I was exploring this, I would notice sometimes that I could easily recognize, oh yeah, I'm aware again. The object wasn't so clear, but it was clear there was a little bit of agitation, non-ease. The mind was not completely settled. And that was like, oh, that's interesting. I'm noticing that agitation. And then there was a little bit of curiosity. Huh, what's that agitation related to? And then there became an awareness that the body was uncomfortable. And so it wasn't immediately clear to me. It was a kind of subtle, low-grade discomfort in the body that wasn't immediately obvious. But the agitation in the mind had kind of picked up on that experience and was alerting me to there's something to be aware of here, something to be curious about. So in daily life, this exploration around becoming aware, first of all, it can be a great like avenue towards beginning to cultivate mindfulness in any activity, in whatever we're doing, because we do start to see that mindfulness arises with anything. You know, it can arise while driving or while talking or while eating or while, you know, typing an email on the computer or while taking a walk. It's like it can arise with any experience. And that begins to help us to recognize that mindfulness isn't limited to the things that the things that we direct it to. That it arises with whatever experience. It can arise with any experience. And it also begins to help us get familiar with, like, just becoming aware throughout, I was going to use the word random, but it's not random when this happens, but just disparate experiences throughout our day that mindfulness can come up. And the more we get familiar with mindfulness kind of returning in various times of our day, those moments become more obvious to us, and then we get more of them, because they actually happen a lot. They happen way more than we know. It's just that what often happens is what I described before, that we become aware, and then our mindfulness gets lost by following and, you know, connecting to, proliferating about what we've become aware of. And so the kind of connection, the attunement to, oh, mindfulness is back, gives us a moment to connect with that, and that connection with it helps our minds to be able to recognize more of those, and then we end up with this like thread of little moments of mindfulness through the day. And then over time, we begin to also be able to pull that thread through our daily lives, those bursts or those kind of coming into being of mindfulness. It's not usually just there and gone. It has a little bit of a life to it. It arises and it lingers for a while. And we don't have to necessarily in daily life jump onto that and try to do the mindfulness, but we can begin to kind of see, oh, this mindfulness is here yeah, for a few minutes or maybe 30 seconds or 20 seconds or something. And we get familiar with a kind of a wave of being aware. And then just get on with your day, you know, just begin to explore these moments of mindfulness and thinking of them almost as little gifts from our practice. You know, they are arising because we have, partly they arise because that's the nature of our mind, to have these moments of mindfulness. But as we've cultivated mindfulness, they also begin to arise because we have cultivated them. And so we can think of each time we notice this mindfulness returning, it's a little like gift of our practice coming into fruit. And we get to just be aware in that moment and taking in, you know, how is the mind? Is it easeful, or is there some agitation connected with that? So I think it's really helpful, especially right now where we're all kind of sheltering in place and at home, to be speaking about ways to really connect with our practice, not only on the cushion, but in everything that we're doing, because there's so much that's new happening in our lives. Very easy to just get caught in the details of what's going on, and there's a lot that's worth exploring and looking at in this very unusual time of our lives. And in fact, one of the I invited I don't know how many of you noticed this, but at least one of you did. I invited questions submitted in advance through a link that I put into the description of the event on the IMC website. And partly I thought of doing this because sometimes people are more comfortable, not asking a question live it can be very vulnerable to ask a question live. But also to open this to people who can't necessarily attend this, and this is partly why I'm recording these, to, you know, put them on Audio Dharma, and you know, people who can't attend at this particular time, you're welcome. I'm kind of speaking to the podcast right now. You're welcome to submit questions, and I'll respond to questions, and then they can be posted. Today I only had one question submitted that way, and it's a good question. I don't know whether we'll get to another question beyond this one, but we'll see. And if we do, then we'll open it up to, you know, either typing questions into the chat box or raising your hand. I will warn you that if you type into the chat box while I'm talking, I won't respond while I'm talking, and it can be a little. I haven't quite learned to tune out that orange thing popping up on my screen, so it kind of distracts the flow of the thought initially. So maybe you could just defer typing into the chat box until the end, until I finish this particular question. So the question that came in, and my guess is that many people are experiencing something like this, which is partly why it's such a great question. All the seclusion and separation from my usual activities has shaken up my sense of self. It's difficult to know how to relate to the rest of the world now. My sense of self seems less real now, which could be helpful, but the rest of the world also seems less real in a way that doesn't seem wholesome. What's a good way to practice with this? So I think this is a great question, and just curious, any of you, you know, with a show of hands, have something kind of similar going on, you know, this different feeling of, yeah, so I'm seeing some responses, some nods, and this is not surprising, because so much, and this is something that we can learn in a way about our, this is a great opportunity for learning some things about our sense of self, because so much of our sense of self, and what I really should say, our senses of selves, plural, because there's not just one sense of self. there's a lot of different senses of self that arise in relationship to our various experiences, to particular activities that we do, roles that we play, relationships that we have. And this is a great place to explore what the sense of self is, and to kind of be curious about an investigation of the sense of self. The teaching of not self is basically that, a simple way to think about it is that what we think of as a sense of self is not what it seems to be, and that there isn't a inherent abiding entity kind of controlling our experience, but there are processes at play, and that what we think of as something stable and reliable as a sense of self is simply a conditioned unfolding of processes in moment-to-moment experience. And the conditions that lead to a particular sense of self, and if you start to begin to be curious about, well, what is the sense of self that's happening right now? Like this question reveals, wow, it feels like a different sense of self. It's not, perhaps not one that's so familiar, this experience that's happening right now. In this shelter in place, in the separation from our usual activities, we are not in the same conditions and having the same arising senses of self that we're familiar with. And so it's very natural that there would be a kind of almost a little bit of a disorientation around, wow, you know, who am I anyway? That's a great thing to observe. First of all, I want to point out, that the noticing of this, the sense of self seems less real now. It's a great observation. It's like the curiosity here would be, so it seems less real now, perhaps because there's less familiarity to, we're not just kind of sliding into the gloves that fit comfortably. It's almost like we're finding our way with these new circumstances, and it's like our system hasn't had time to land with anything that's like stable and comfortable. No, this is how I am in this situation. So it feels more fluid or less real in the way of this question. And that, as this kind of points out, it could be helpful, and I think it is helpful to notice that fluidity or that like almost instability of the sense of self in this situation, but also to notice the discomfort, if there is discomfort, if it feels disorienting, or if it feels confusing, or if it feels shameful, or it feels exciting, what is the relationship to this experience? What these experiences? Because I think we've all been thrown into radically different situation, and our organism, our system, kind of likes familiarity. It likes habit. It likes things to be similar and familiar, and so we orient in that direction. And so it's like our system is trying to figure out, okay, what's my, where am I going to land with this, and how am I going to land with that? And so it's essentially what's going on right now is our habit of self is trying to figure out what it is, who it is right now. It's almost like the habit of the sense of self is looking for somewhere to land. And it may not be finding any place to land so comfortably. And so that's a really interesting thing to notice. And is there discomfort about that? So that's one side of the equation or the picture, is the, looking at what is the sense of self or lack thereof, and what is the relationship to that? Is there a kind of a sense of looking for who I am you know, a kind of a searching of how do I land with this experience? You know, who am I in this experience? If that's happening, that's useful to be aware of, to not like have to figure out who you are, but to know, wow, searching for who I am is what's happening right now. The other side that's pointed out by this question is the rest of the world also seems less real. And this would be, you know, interesting to reflect on different ways this might happen. You know, sometimes when we're not engaging with the world as directly, you know, we're all more secluded. We're getting our information around about the world, many of us or most of us, through you know, the computer. We're getting it through the television. We're not getting it directly, and so there's a little bit of a buffer, or you know, a kind of a something that the information is going through, and we feel perhaps a little more remote from the world. I think that I've seen that in my own experience sometimes, and it can be useful to see, can we actually explore connecting with, through maybe a little bit of reflection, you know, taking in some of the news, because the news is pretty, intense right now. It can be intense on the beautiful side, and there's some really beautiful things happening, but also there's a lot of, like, wow, you know, the wondering, you know, what does the other side of this look like? You know, it doesn't, I don't know, it just seems like going back to what we think of as what was normal, it's a long way away, and probably not going to look the same. You know, it's like this is radical what has happened in our world, and so who knows what it's going to look like, and so that's pretty intense to take in, and so some of the separation can be also a kind of the mind realizing that taking this in is a bit overwhelming. And so you need to honor that. If the information is kind of overwhelming to take in, then it's useful to have some strategies so that you don't get like pulled into the, you know, the mind states that can come along with that overwhelm, despair, depression, confusion, anger, you know, the whole host of reactive emotions that can arise with the overwhelm. And that's not so useful to get lost in. And so it can be really useful to begin to recognize if that buffering that's happening, if that sense of distance, the sense that the world is less real right now, is because the mind is trying to protect itself from overwhelm, then I think it's useful to simply recognize, oh, okay, the mind feels less real right now. I mean, the world feels less real right now. Maybe that's the mind taking care of itself so it doesn't get overwhelmed. And perhaps from time to time, kind of checking in, you know, can I actually connect with some piece of that reality by reflecting and, you know, just reflecting in a way the impact that this has on us and our loved ones. You know, the uncertainty that is true not only for everyone out there, but also for us, everyone in our families and our friends, that the vulnerability that is true and always has been true, but is very much exposed as true, as something that's very hard to deny right now. You know, that if you can connect for a few moments around, yes, this situation has an effect on me, on my loved ones. I am of the nature to age, to sicken, to die. My loved ones also. And you might find, you know, again, this is a little bit of a test to see if the buffer that is the information coming through the computer and is kind of like, you know, we're not really taking in the reality of the world, you know, that partly because it feels, you know, we maybe have a habit too. This can be habit in a way that when we read the news, you know, when we take in the news, that we think of it as, oh, that's happening over there. That's happening, you know, oh yeah, poor them, you know, those people who are experiencing that thing. And we have a habit, I think, of separating other. And that is a form of selfing. You know, that's another way that selfing manifests, is the sense that those people there are experiencing that thing, not me experiencing that thing. That separation, the whenever there's the sense of that separation or the sense of other experiencing something, there is a sense of self that's in connection with that. And so that's it's useful sometimes to notice. Another investigation in the sense of self can be exploring the way our mind does that othering. You know, oh, those people there. And then again, you know, potentially reflecting what's happening to them, I'm not immune from. And bringing that is a wisdom reflection. The Buddha actually encourages us to reflect on that, those truths, that we are not immune from aging, illness, death, from separation, from impermanence, basically. And so the reflection can help to bridge that separation. And it's close to time. I just want to stop and check in and see if there's, yeah, we have another couple minutes. So if there's any comments or reflections that this brought up for anyone. And you can raise your hand or you could type into the chat box at this point. Okay, so there's actually a lot more to say about this. Wait, somebody just typed something into the chat box. Oh, somebody talked about the meditation, in the meditation, receiving the breath rather than focusing on the breath. That's a useful way to think about the practice of this awareness being receptive rather than me aiming at it, that things come into awareness. With this reflection on self and the rest of the world feeling not real in a way that feels, as this question says, not so wholesome. You know, I think it's possible that this is more, as I said, you know, the habit of the separation of self and other is very habitual and common and may go by unnoticed as we're going through our lives in our ordinary way. The fact that things are so different, it may not be that the world is actually, you know, there's more separation in the perception of the rest of the world right now. But perhaps it's being recognized as there being that sense of separation. So it could be that this is actually, highlighting something that's been going on below the surface. And so, the investigation of that, I think, is the biggest kind of practice that we can do with that. And yeah, Rebecca, quickly. We're almost out of time, but we'll see if it, quick question. Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe just a reflection. I've noticed that my sense of self isn't dramatically changed, but I can tell that like it's just being held a little more precariously.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's sort of loose, but it feels precarious. But what I'm waiting for, I think, is I'm waiting to define the world, however it is now or however it's going to be, before I decide the self, before that settles. Like, I need to know what that is before I know what this is.
That's a great recognition.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's really useful to notice that. And the possibility exists to not, it's kind of like that sense of like, okay, what am I going to be? What am I going to be? It's like, just notice that, that what am I going to be is like waiting for something. that might be a great exploration. So yeah, thank you for your comment, and it's time to stop now. So